The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com. Hey there, and welcome to the podcast. This is Kristen.
What's up? This is Molly.
Molly, today we are tackling an important question. Why does the sizzle fizzle?
Oh, it sounds like Sex in the City and Cosmo.
Yeah, but we're actually going to... We're going to get deep. We're going to get inside some brains and talk about love and passion and...
Places Carrie Bradshaw never took you.
Yeah, and more importantly, when it fizzles out. Which reminds me, Molly, of a little bit of a story.
Ooh.
Story time.
Is homeschooling involved?
No homeschooling involved. This was a... the date and time will just leave in the ether.
Remain anonymous.
Yeah, when you suggested this title, why is the sizzle fizzle? And it reminded me of a certain name in my cell phone directory. Mm-hmm. Fizzle.
Oh.
There's someone who goes
You have a friend named Fizzle?
Yeah, there was a guy I met him, things started to sizzle. And it just seemed really great. And, you know, I had all of those characteristics of romantic passion. I couldn't think about anything else. I was so nervous. I couldn't even eat sometimes. It was just whenever I would see him, my palms would sweat. It was awful, really. And then after a while, you know, it just fizzled.
It fizzled.
Yeah. And so I decided one night, to change his name in the phone to Fizzle. And I actually forgot about that. And I ran into him the other day, in fact, and got a text message. And I was like, who is Fizzle? Oh, yeah, that's Fizzle. That's what I renamed him as.
So, I can only hope Fizzle listens to this podcast.
Yeah, Fizzle, if you're out there, this one's for you. So I thought this would be a pretty good story to maybe chart the path of romance and passion in our brains. Because Molly, I felt crazy. I really did. I consider myself a very practical, rational person. And when I met Fizzle, there was no practical or rational reason why I was so drawn to him.
Mm-hmm.
It was something I was out of my mind. I didn't understand it. But I took a lot of comfort in this research that we've been doing because I can blame my brain.
You can blame your brain along with a whole host of my favorite word, hormones.
Yes, Molly, but
and chemicals.
Yes, but we have to remember with hormones, with this special episode on passion and love, we talk a lot about how hormones affect women's behavior specifically.
True.
But you know what, Molly? When it comes to the neurobiology of love, men and women are on an equal playing field.
Right. These hormones are affecting everyone. By the way, I think Neurobiology of Love is going to be Celine Dion's next album title.
I hope so. Maybe then I'll listen to it.
All right. So we're going to, first of all, make a little disclaimer. Even though a lot of what Kristen described in her attraction to Fizzle sounded a little lustful, we're going to skip right over lust.
Yeah, I don't think that it wasn't purely lust. I will say that straight out. There was definitely a attraction phase to an attachment phase. There was a build up.
This was a connection was being made.
Yeah.
It was more than just how do you do?
Yeah, we forged a friendship.
Okay. So what was going on in your brain past lust, which is a lot of chemicals like testosterone, sex drive chemicals, when we get into this sort of what's termed the attraction phase of love?
Mm-hmm. First we have the visual input. I saw Fizzle from a distance, mm-hmm. and I was attracted.
And this visual input becomes very important later on, that basically when you see someone that you care for, there's this huge visual indentation they make on your brain.
Mm-hmm. And so once I established this visual input and I started seeing Fizzle more and more, and I got progressively more nervous every time I would see him, at least for a while, there were certain parts of my brain that were probably more active than others, mm-hmm. right? So when I first started seeing Fizzle, and I, like I said, I would get very nervous. Maybe my heart would race a little bit more. I could never think of anything interesting at all to say. It was because certain parts of my brain were really active and other parts weren't so active, right, Molly?
That's correct. Have you ever heard of your hypothalamus, Kristen?
Well, I have.
Well, it was screwing you over.
It was. The hypothalamus is this little part of the brain that releases a little hormone we like to call dopamine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and dopamine is a pretty big part of the reward system. Basically, even though it made you nervous, you thrived on seeing Fizzle.
Yeah, of course. And in addition to dopamine, there was another chemical called norepinephrine that was surging through my veins whenever I would see a Fizzle. And norepinephrine is similar to adrenaline, which mm-hmm. is why it feels like this fight or flight where when I would see him, there would be a split second in my brain where I was like, will I approach or will I flee? And sometimes I would flee.
Just because you couldn't take it. Because your brain is just on overdrive, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But not all of it. Certain parts of the brain do shut down.
The prefrontal cortex.
The prefrontal cortex essentially shuts down. And this is sort of why love is blind and why fools fall in love, because when this part shuts down, you're able to overlook all these flaws. Everything is just perfect. Fizzle was the most important, wonderful man, I'm sure. No flaws at all.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, well, yes, that's another story for another time. But exactly, the prefrontal cortex is associated with our social judgment. So yeah, for us, for women, it would make us more trusting. You know, even though maybe Fizzle didn't have a college degree, maybe Fizzle, you know, maybe didn't have the steadiest job, but that didn't matter to my prefrontal cortex because it wasn't even registering.
Yeah, you had no fear, essentially. And scientists have kind of described this as kind of a push-pull. Like, basically, you're getting it from all sides. You're getting pushed into that reward system. You want more dopamine. You're getting pulled forward by the fact that you have no judgment about this person, essentially, that you can love them despite all their flaws and despite the fact that they make you incredibly jumpy.
Yeah, and in addition to the jumpiness, there's also, you know, where you get the weird mood swings where I was so happy about Fizzle. And then I'd be like, well, Fizzle's not calling. Why is this not happening? And then, you know, sometimes it was just like my appetite would be weird. And that is to blame on serotonin. When mm-hmm. the dopamine goes up, levels of serotonin in my brain would go down. And serotonin is makes you feel calm, relaxed. And once that drops, that's when I got a little more anxious. And maybe, you know, just wasn't eating as much. So that is yet another factor that makes us, quote unquote, crazy in love.
But this is clearly no way to live. Like, the human species would never survive if we were just walking around hungry, spaced out, jumpy all the time. We'd be walking in front of buses. We would be just doing bizarre things.
Yeah. So thank goodness for evolutionary biology that said, okay, you know, this is nice. This is pushing you towards someone, but you need to actually bond and attach. And in order to do that, you can't be flighty and not being able to form sentences at all. So there's another set of hormones that starts to kick in during the attachment phase that follows attraction.
Yeah, and this is the part where the sizzle begins to fizzle. This is not to say everyone's just going to break up the way Kristen and Fizzle did, because there are sort of the next wave of chemicals that come through your brain to help you form a connection.
Right, and the chemicals we are talking about specifically are oxytocin and vasopressin. And these are associated with orgasms. And for women, it is also associated with childbirth and breastfeeding. These are the very intimate bonding hormones that give you, oxytocin is sometimes called the warm and cuddly hormone because it's associated with those most intimate experiences.
Right. When you have sex with someone, eventually you begin to form this bond, and that's thanks to the oxytocin, which makes you want to stay around and be with this person and just spend all day with them.
And we should say that estrogen and testosterone, not surprisingly, do interact with oxytocin a little bit differently. With estrogen, the combination of estrogen and oxytocin gives us more feelings of trust and bonding. Whereas with testosterone and oxytocin, it actually mitigates the calming effects of the oxytocin and it spurs that fight or flight a little bit more in males, which, once again, another conversation for another time.
But what's interesting about sort of the difference between the two stages, according to Love Researcher, which I would like to have that title someday, not officially, just in my private life.
Casually.
Seems like a good thing to have on a business card. I digress. According to Love Researcher Helen Fisher, the thinking is that once the vasopressin, which is like oxytocin has sort of a clever name as the commitment chemical. Once that starts surging through your brain, it kind of blocks the pathways of the dopamine so that you might not be getting as much of it. And like we said in the attraction stage, that was the part that was making you just be like, must see him, must see him, must have reward, like mouse pushing a pellet, getting the food pellet.
Yeah, one word, Molly, addiction.
Yeah.
Because the dopamine reward system that is triggered in the insane, romantic, passionate phase of love is the exact same thing as, let's just say, snorting a line of cocaine.
Yeah. And so that's, I mean, eventually they would like to do research, I guess, on people who have affairs and see if their oxytocin receptors act like other people's do, or if they constantly need that hit, that love junkie hit.
Right. They think that people who have been in committed long-term relationships for years and years and still claim to be madly in love with each other might have higher levels of oxytocin in their brains or might have more oxytocin receptors, which makes them more innately monogamous.
Right. And you know, there are not many monogamous species out there.
Right.
It's kind of debatable whether humans are. In fact, the only one they're entirely sure about is a little creature called the prairie vole.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done experiments where they hinder the amount of oxytocin in a prairie vole's brain. And it goes from being this very stable, monogamous creature to being like a crazy love-crazed prairie vole, whatever that looks like. They start having sex with everything.
Right. Whereas, like you said, they will mate for life and be perfectly content. And I think in one of the studies that I saw, they actually have more sex than they need to in order to reproduce. So they're happy little prairie voles.
Yeah, it's all that vasopressin.
Mm-hmm. Well, Molly, now it's time, now that we're deep in the attachment phase, which, you know, Fizzle and I don't think we really got to this point. But if we had gotten to this point and we were still hanging out together, one chemical that would go up in my brain would have been serotonin. That's one that I referenced before. It's sort of the antithesis to norepinephrine. The norepinephrine is in the early stages where, you know, palms are sweaty, heart's beating and all of that. But serotonin calms you down, makes you feel safe and comfortable with that person. It's sort of like, you know, the sweet old couples that you see walking hand in hand down the sidewalk, they just got, you know, a little just serotonin just coursing through their little old veins, making them just feel comfortable together.
Right. I mean, when, you know, we were talking about this before, I sort of made it sound like you kind of just get drugged up and you just kind of stay with the person out of inertia.
Right. But we also have, thanks to evolution, we have these stabilizing factors in our brain. And when we talk about why does the sizzle fizzle, it seems like you come to a crossroads. Everybody hits that initial attraction phase. And, you know, if the sizzle fizzles, it's, you know, it all has to do with these sets of chemicals in our brain.
And also one thing that we didn't mention that comes back online in this attachment phase is that prefrontal cortex lights back up. And that's where you start to see the flaws in people. But what's interesting is when we were researching this, I was like, oh man, you know, a woman can fall out of love with her husband because of these chemicals in her brain. But as we mentioned, vasopressin and oxytocin are also really key chemicals in mother-child bonding.
Right. When you look at MRI scans of people who are in love with someone else, like sexually, physically in love with someone else, and look at the brains of mother to child, there are a lot of interacting, overlapping areas that are lighting up. But there's one place in the brain that really makes a difference.
Yeah. And remember when we were talking about the impact of seeing a face and how that was so important, where that kind of dies off in terms of a physical romantic love that never really shuts off with the mother, probably because she's always examining her child's face because it's changing, because she's looking for signs of illness. That facial recognition part of the brain plays a very important part in sustaining that mother-child love. And where, you know, the dopamine eventually levels off in romantic love, it never really does in mother-child love. So you almost like don't need the reward of your child loving you back, which I guess is a pretty handy evolutionary tick when it comes to a child being a teenager.
And they've also highlighted the hypothalamus as the main difference point between, in the brain, between romantic love and mother love, if you will, because when I was attracted to Fizzle and whoever else, my hypothalamus is kind of going crazy. But if I ever, you know, have a child and I'm looking at the child, my hypothalamus is not going to be active at all.
Hopefully not.
Right. They think it's more of the seat of the erotic love.
Yeah. So, pretty heavy stuff. Luckily, I was reassured to know that while the sizzle may fizzle between me and any fellow, hopefully it will never fizzle for my children.
Well, and Molly,
hypothetically.
Molly, I have to throw out one more study that was conducted by Helen Fisher and her associates.
Love researcher.
Love researchers. Yes. They looked at MRI scans of these couples who, I think the average time they'd been together was 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
Been together for a long time. And according to all of this research that we've been talking about now, it would have fizzled out somewhere in the brain. They might have had like a nice bonding, a lot of serotonin going on, but you can't still be in love in the brain. The neurobiology has to be different, right?
I would think so.
Well, they were actually wrong. They were really happy to find out that the same areas that were lit up during this romantic phase 21 years down the road were still lighting up when they would see pictures of the person they were mated with.
That's good, because a lot of this other research is pretty depressing. It just seems like we're on a downward spiral. But, you know, those old couples showing us it can be done.
Yeah, it can be done. So, and it's also, once again, I take comfort in knowing next time the sizzle fizzles, I'll just blame it on, you know, dopamine.
Just say it's not me, it's my brain.
It's not me, it's my dopamine.
But if you want to learn more about dopamine, it's all on HowStuffWorks.com. We've got an article called How Love Works.
Mm-hmm. You should go on and check it out. And while you're online, you should also send me and Molly question, comment, email to MomStuff@HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.